It's time for No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Here are your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren from the Area Agency on Aging.
Good morning. It's time for No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Good people there to help you with your medical needs, seniors, or you work with seniors as a caregiver. 303-480-6700. Of course, that's their number. I'm Murphy Houston. Now, normally my partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren, who runs the Area Agency on Aging, is with us. She is not. She's off on vacation, which most people are doing this time of year. But our good friend and a big part of our show here on No Copay Radio, Dr. John Douglas, former director of Tri-County Health and also worked with the CDC, is here with us. John, how you doing?
Murph, I'm doing okay. I'm staying cool, although it's certainly across the country been a pretty hot summer.
Well, that's a good segue, John. You're getting used to the radio business. It's a nice segue into what I really wanted to talk about today, because I was reading about these temperatures. And not so much around Denver yet, but it could be. But, you know, you're talking about Phoenix, Arizona, wherever it might be, temperatures 104 and more. And getting to those temperatures, 104 to maybe 122, is not good for the human body. And I'm going, wow, I never thought about that. Even if you use stuff like sunscreen, it's not as good. Is that true?
Absolutely. Extreme heat is likely, as we continue to experience the impact of climate change, to be one of the top human health impacting results. And we are, as you said, seeing extreme heat everywhere. It's the hottest month June was ever recorded on Earth.
Wow.
Since we began doing recordings. We're having heat waves across the southern U.S., southern Europe. It's particularly bad in South Asia, India, Pakistan, et cetera. Phoenix has had 20 days in a row, not just above 104, but above 110, only getting down to the 90s at night.
Jeez.
Can you imagine that?
No, I can't. That's crazy.
It's just awful. But, yeah, extreme heat takes an enormous toll on the body, resulting in heat exhaustion and heat stroke. So it's a very serious issue.
Well, and I thought it curious, John, because I was reading this article about the heat and how it affects your body and your organs. And what I think a lot of people may not realize, and I knew this, but I never really think about it, your skin is considered an organ. Am I correct about that?
You are correct. I mean, you're right. We don't think about it like that. We think of an organ as like a heart or a liver or a kidney. But yeah, the skin is really its own organ system. It obviously is the biggest organ system because it covers the whole body. And it's not only the protective layer for our body, but it also has got, speaking of heat, it's where our sweat glands are located. And the ability to sweat and have that sweat evaporate is one of our biggest protective defenses against heat. And when it gets hot and it gets humid, not so much of a problem in our climate, but it certainly is in a lot of places around the world, that sweat can't evaporate. And when it doesn't evaporate, our number one defense from our skin organ producing that cooling moisture really doesn't work.
No, it would lead, I would think, to like dehydration and problems like that if you're not careful.
Yeah, it can. You're absolutely right, because we lose a lot of water. I mean, not only through peeing, to be blunt, but we lose it through respiration, because when you and I breathe out, we're breathing out water vapor along with carbon dioxide. But we also lose it through sweat. And in Colorado, that can be a particular issue because it is such a dry climate. The sweat cools us. We don't even notice we're sweating, but we can get dehydrated and not even realize it. And that loss of sweat is not only water, but it's also electrolytes. It's things like sodium and potassium. So when you're in a place where you're sweating a lot or you're hot and it's dry and you may not be aware you're sweating, you need to replace not only the water but also the electrolytes with some sort of substance, whether it's Gatorade or whether it's eating food along with your water, that will keep your electrolytes replenished.
Yeah, you forget about that too, don't you? And maybe you know more about this, John, than obviously I do. why is it such a problem this year, this heat problem? We hear it all the time, and we've had heat before, but this year really seems to be tough.
It's really tough. I think three reasons. One is, it's summer. Okay, that happens every year, but clearly it's our hottest time of year when we're exposed to more sunlight and more direct rays of the sunlight. And whether the sun is hitting us at an angle or hitting us directly actually turns out to matter. But the real big changes are we see annual or every several year cycles in El Nino, and La Nina. And those are alterations of ocean currents in the Pacific. We're in an El Nino cycle, which typically means hotter weather. But the real reason, honestly, Murph, is greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. We try to stay away from controversial topics on the radio, but this is unquestionably what's happening now. And we are at a point where we have to think of every way possible to try to prevent more greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere. And we got stuff already baked in. We've already released a lot of carbon dioxide and methane, and we've got to think of increasingly ways of adapting to what is unquestionably going to be a hotter climate.
Well, and it's just more proof that this problem with the atmosphere and what's going on is a real thing, isn't it?
It's absolutely a real thing, and it's not just real in our country, but it's real around the world, and it's got a potential for not only being enormously impactful for human life, but enormously destabilizing in the sense of some places are getting hot enough that it may be difficult for populations to sustain themselves. I mean, that's an apocalyptic thought.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a lot of pressure at our southern border, and, the impact of climate change is almost certainly going to affect that, which will bring it home to us as well.
Something to think about for sure. And who does it affect most? Is it everybody of all ages or the younger because their skin is newer than the older people that are out there? Or does it just affect everybody?
Well, that's a good question. I wish our old experienced skin was better than younger skin, Murph, but it turns out that's not the case.
Of course not.
It is everybody. Yeah. And nobody's invulnerable to these sort of potential heat impacts. But you're right. It is, as it was for COVID, the older folks, our body thermostats don't work as well. And our appreciation of being thirsty also doesn't work as well either. So older folks, very young people, babies, our pets, they typically can't control when they intake water. We have to remember to shade them and cool them. Pregnant women, certainly. And then people with various underlying health conditions, which may make the ability to tolerate extreme heat more difficult. People with heart disease, diabetes, neurologic disease, or, frankly, folks who have various mental health conditions who may not be prompted to take care of themselves, come out of the heat, hydrate, et cetera, et cetera. So those are groups that we particularly worry about with extreme heat.
And you have to think, John, once again, because we're mile high Denver, being a mile high, which is mostly the country is not, it's got to affect us a little more maybe.
You know, it's a mixed picture. We certainly can get very, very hot summer temperatures, but we do have low humidity. And humidity ends up being a major factor because of that sweat evaporation business. Whether you're looking at what we used to talk about, the heat index, you'll often hear a heat index being higher than temperature. There's a new term that's being used now of wet bulb global temperature.
Wow.
Kind of a bulb. But that takes into account not only the temperature and the humidity, but also cloud cover and wind speed and the angle of the sun. And it's probably a better metric, and we're probably going to see that used more. So we do have more direct sunlight. We do get hotter, but fortunately we've got less humidity.
Well, it's only the middle of July, getting towards the end of July. We've got a lot of hot days ahead. What do we do? How do we protect ourselves? What's the recommendation with this extreme heat?
Yeah, that's such a critical question. And I think number one is, when it's really hot outside, try to limit your activities if you have the ability to control it. to the cooler parts of the day, the early morning or the late afternoon, early evening. Number one. Number two, hydrate, 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 and don't forget the electrolytes when you're doing that. Number three, when you can take advantage of shade, and if you're not going to be able to be in the shade and you're outdoors, counterintuitively, you're actually better protected against the sun if you're wearing long sleeves and long pants. How could that be? You know, aren't you going to get hotter? But deflecting the sun by wearing those things is really important, including on your head. And then look out for people around you. Those groups we mentioned, the elderly, babies, pets, et cetera. If you're feeling pretty good and protecting yourself, be aware that other people may be having more challenges, and you can try to help them, at least with hydration, at least with cooling. A lot of our cities are setting up, have already set up, cooling centers, because not everybody has air conditioning, and some people are going to get incredibly hot. So I think those are probably the key things the average person ought to be thinking about.
What about sunscreen? Does that stuff, it does have to help, right?
Well, sunscreen's not going to help you against heat. Sunscreen's going to block ultraviolet light and skin damaging effect. And that's really important from a skin cancer prevention, but it's not going to do anything to modify the impact of heat on your body.
Wow, that's kind of burning me out there, so to speak, a little bit. I thought, well, I'll just lather up. I'll be okay. But I never thought, yeah, that doesn't really help with the fact that it's 104 degrees outside. So
yeah, lathering up is a good idea, but it's not, as you said, going to replace the need for the other measures we just talked about.
Well, I guess that's a thing we need to be aware of. I don't know if people really thought about that. In fact, I was reading here, John, not too long ago, that because of the hot around the country, and I don't know what people are thinking about, but some are taking their vacations where it's way hot down like in Death Valley, where it gets really into the 120 range, and they're doing that for fun.
Well, that's, you know, there are, you know, thrill seekers, and running a mile in Death Valley is someone dressed up like Darth Vader, I heard, did the other day.
Oh my God.
You know, that's a way of getting thrill. And I will mention, by the way, that folks who do have to be in the heat can adapt to the heat by gradually exposing themselves to more and more of it, or in conditions where they're going to get hotter. You got to be really careful with that. But our firefighting friends who have to wear heavy protective clothing, whether they're fighting fires or doing other kind of rescue efforts, folks like that clearly take the issue of heat acclimatation very seriously. And if you're in that category, or you know somebody who is, I think that can be an important step. Although running a mile like Darth Vader may not be the step everybody ought to take.
Yeah, right. Well, those guys have another problem. We probably can't even talk about that, for goodness sakes. But I think about it, too, in this time of year, it seems everywhere, these guys that are doing road construction outside in this weather, and they're working with hot asphalt. What would that like? Well, how do you fight that? And they all you know, have a warning equipment on, yellow vests and helmets. That's got to be tough.
Oh, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. And I think all of us have got to realize we've got essential people doing work for us like that. They need lots of breaks. They need lots of sun protection. Honestly, when it gets really hot, many businesses are pulling workers out of the direct heat between, you know, 10 and 2, 10:30, 2:30, that kind of thing. So, and yes, the substance like asphalt and concrete absorb heat and can create a hotter microenvironment. So that's a really a risky kind of situation. And by the way, if you're outdoors and you can walk on a dirt path or a gravel path, that's going to be a little less hot for you than walking on asphalt.
Always good sound advice from our buddy Dr. John Douglas, formerly director of the Tri-County Health and worked with the CDC all those years, and now with No Copay Radio. John, thanks for that advice. Let's everybody stay cool. I guess it doesn't help to walk around with a fan hooked to your body, because it'd be a little hard to do that. So just keep taking the fluids and staying well, right?
Keep taking the fluids and just be smart. We got some hot days ahead.
Well, that's for sure. John, thanks for coming on today. Appreciate it.
Okay, Murph, take care of yourself.
It's No Copay Radio here on Cozy 101.1. Every Sunday, you know, we're here at 7:30. We appreciate you being there as well. It's brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Now, hang on. We got more coming up for you this morning.
We now continue with No Copay Radio. with your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren.
And we're still here, and I'm glad you're still there. It's No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1 here every Sunday morning, as I mentioned, at 7:30. Brought to you by the good people at Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. My partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren, who's the boss there, is off on vacation. So it's just me, Murphy Houston, and our new guest, Dr. James Kelly. And Dr. Kelly is the executive director of the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, the national director of the Avalon Action Alliance TBI program, and professor of neurology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. And he's allowed me to call him Jim, so I will definitely do that. Jim, welcome to No Copay Radio. Appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you very much, Murphy.
Well, you're a busy guy. I don't know how you keep up with all these jobs. So let's start with about the Marcus Institute of Brain Health. How did that come to exist and what's it all about? Because I'm sure, as myself and many of our listeners, don't even know what that's all about.
Sure. Well, the Marcus Institute is a unique place. It's started about 7 years ago, 6.5 years ago, with funding from a man named Bernie Marcus, thus the name.
Right.
Bernie, the name many people may know, is one of the two co-founders of the Home Depot. And so Bernie, besides being a successful businessman, is really a very dedicated philanthropist with specific causes in mind. He'd already funded a traumatic brain injury program for veterans in Atlanta, which is where his foundation is based. And wow. But he wanted to have a broader impact. And so he had hired a military officer, reservist, whose first name was Marcus, as it turns out, Marcus Ruzek, to scour the national landscape and find programs that could move the ball forward, so to speak.
Right.
I was at the time in Washington, D.C., in Bethesda, really, at the new newly named Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. And so there I was heading up an institute called the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, NICO, which was a dedicated institute for active duty service members coming back from war.
Okay.
With concussion or more severe brain injury. Bernie was intrigued by that. And so I was eventually called in to discussions in Atlanta. And they said, how about if we do that for veterans and not just active duty? Let the military take care of the active duty. We'll help with veterans, but in a non-VA setting, in an academic or private setting. And so that's what we're doing. That led to the foundation board and Bernie specifically saying, here's funding, go get this done, and then let us know how to do it more broadly. His second sentence to me, Murphy, was, I don't want one, I want 10.
You got to love this guy.
Yeah, he said, you know, he said, Jim, I didn't build one hardware store. I started the Home Depot.
Yeah.
And so he was immediately thinking about big impact, scaling the way this should be done, and proving a method of taking care of these individuals that would really be a standard for the medical community. And that's what we're about.
So how many facilities do you have now? Is there 10? What Bernie wanted?
We are the hub of this national network. We can talk about that Avalon Action Alliance. There are now 6 partners that receive funding from Bernie and from Arthur Blank, the other co-founder of the Home Depot, who has stepped up once again to help out under these circumstances and following Bernie's lead to do these huge, big projects.
Wow.
So we now have 6. I have a couple more already on the hook, so to speak. They're looking at signing on and probably will even later this calendar year. So then I'll have 1 or 2 more after that, depending on how things go. If you listen to Bernie, he won't even be satisfied with 10. I think he'll want more. But I think that really we're mainly intended to meet the need in various locales around the country.
Sure.
So that veterans and then first responders as well can travel locally or regionally and not all the way across the country.
You know, I got to tell you, Jim, you never really hear the great things that a lot of people with a lot of money do. You always hear about how they might be greedy or how they don't help people. But what you've just said about Mr. Home Depot has totally impressed me. What a guy he must be.
Well, no kidding. And he's even more impressive in person. He really is dynamic. The man's 94 years old. He hasn't missed a step this entire time. He wants people's feet held to the fire to do what they're supposed to do. He's really good at that. And so he's absolutely the leader of this and delightful to work with. And it's his vision that we're really putting in place here in the various steps that have led to this national network.
Good job. So here we are with these wonderful institutions, the Marcus Institute. What's the mission? Who does it help? Now, you mentioned veterans coming back from war, but what's the mission and the goal of the Institute?
The main idea is to take care, do clinical care of those with concussion or more severe brain injury that has not resolved, and start with military veterans because of their having served the nation. That's his main focus at the very beginning. That aperture expanded a bit because of others and Bernie's interest in first responders who similarly have these injuries, not uncommonly, many of whom themselves are also veterans.
Right.
And so they actually, in the philanthropist's eyes, are also defending our nation. And as a result of that, we want them to have the same access to care. So those two are the main categories of who we help. And it's people who have had concussion or more severe brain injury, who have residual effects that have not gone away, that impacts their lives, their work, their quality of life, their relationships, in ways that we then can step in and help.
That's unbelievable. Do you work with athletes, too, and people that have been maybe in major accidents, those kinds, construction workers?
We do, and it, in fact, started with athletes. So just that in a sentence or two, before the wars, there was a lot of attention on sports concussion. There still is. And so several of us involved on the national scene in sports concussion research were invited into committees after the wars had started, and there were huge numbers of military having concussion or more severe brain injury. And the Defense Department said, we need help figuring out what to do with this. Show us what you've been doing in the sports world. So it literally started with sports concussion work, led then to the same kind of work with military, but more broadly into the kinds of things, especially with blast injury, that athletes typically aren't affected by and don't experience. So we had to learn what was the military experience with this, and how is it that the sports concussion work could actually apply, and what else we needed to learn. And so the two became interwoven in a way that now we do bring athletes in. We've had mainly football and hockey players join our program, and it's fascinating to me that instead of having their own program, they want to be involved and directly engaged with the military veterans.
Wow.
They're there at the same time.
That's outstanding.
And it's amazing to me. Yeah. They see themselves all as athletes with different uniforms, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point right there. Well, how about the average person? Somebody listening right now, maybe somebody in their family has a concussion situation. Can they get involved? Can they reach out to you for help?
They can. The problem becomes we're stuck with a model of healthcare in this United States of insurance coverage that simply cannot cover the costs of this approach that we use.
Oh, that's too bad.
And it is. And so it's really a very unusual individual's situation that can cover those costs. And it's a delicate balance between making sure at the University of Colorado, where we have rules to follow according to what is the agreements with healthcare insurers,
right,
and these kinds of costs that otherwise are borne by the grant that we've received from Bernie Marcus himself. And
right.
So it's more than you want to get into right now, but it's not the easiest thing to navigate when we're trying to help people that aren't veterans or aren't first responders.
Got it. Talking with Dr. Jim Kelly, the executive director of the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, also professor of neurology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. So what's the future for the Marcus Institute? What direction are you going with this, Jim?
First, we have to prove the model works. And in Bernie's eyes, we want to be the ones that change the way, let's say, insurance companies look at this kind of care.
Good point.
Or the VA itself will then say, yep, this is the kind of thing we want to pay for. So in order to do that, we have instituted from the very beginning clinical outcome measures of our own effectiveness. And so we have now peer-reviewed, published results of the years now that we've been open. There's just a handful of years. We're now in our sixth year. So that we can then show those funding sources the benefit of our approach.
Okay.
And what we're doing then is moving toward influencing more broadly the way this ought to be done. Not that we pretend to know it all, but the idea is we have a proven model now that along with the one at Walter Reed called NICO, in combination will be able to show the world in the business sense how this actually can work, and then to get them on board with the idea of paying for it.
Great idea. So you're telling me what you do is, and it probably is, different than other brain injury programs?
It is indeed. So just as one example of it, you think about your own healthcare. How many times have you had to tell a healthcare professional your own history?
A lot.
You go in and you say it, and you say it all over again the next time you go with someone else. And so we are paid by the grant itself. We have employees who just get the medical records and read them and actually then create a kind of a Cliff's Notes of what it is happened to that individual. So the rest of us on the clinical team can read the kind of digested version of their entire medical history.
Wow.
Well, if you try to look at how our healthcare system works, there's no way to get paid to do that.
Right.
And so healthcare professionals don't. And you end up with incomplete information. Nobody ever has the entire picture. And it's very frustrating for the patients. Now, we're paid because of the generosity of this grant to be able to understand that individual before they even come to us.
Wow.
In ways that they have never been understood before. So if you just look at that alone, there's a huge difference. There's a different way of looking at that individual and understanding them that they benefit from, because there's less guesswork. You're not having to ask them redundant questions and so forth. The other next step is when that individual comes to us on day one, we get to tell them that, thanks for all the help getting your records, and here's what we already know. You don't have to tell us all this. Sit with a team of 6-7 people that are going to help figure this out with you as specialists in this field, in this room, and you tell us what you think is important to you today. What's your top 3 or 4 things you want us to focus on? And you don't need to bother telling us what you've been taking for medications and what didn't work. We know that.
You already know that going in. Jeez.
Yeah, you tell us what's important to you, and then we'll start working on those things with you.
Unbelievable.
And the patients are absolutely flabbergasted.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they say, "What? Wait a minute, all 6 or 7 people are here, and then I start the next hour with one of them doing a detailed evaluation, go to the next. For 3 full days, there's nothing but that kind of evaluation going on, at the end of which we sit with the patient and say, here's what we found.
Unbelievable.
And not uncommonly, it's actually the case that that person is understood better than they've ever been in their lives as to what it is, the nature of the problems are that they're having.
Jim, I can't believe it, and I'm out of time, unfortunately. Dr. Jim Kelly, I'm just I want to ask you a bunch of more questions. I just don't have any more time, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about the Avalon Action Alliance. We'll have you back on another time, No Copay Radio. But thank you for what you are doing, and thank Bernie personally. I think it's awesome what he's doing.
I'll do that, Murphy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Thank you for coming on today, and thank you guys for listening. It's No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog. Have yourself a great weekend, or what's left of it, and we'll talk to you next week.
This has been No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Join us every Sunday at 7:30 here on Cozy 101.1.